Hello, and thank you for tuning into this first podcast. Before starting the podcast, we as YPT board members would like to share a short statement. As many of you know, our dear friend and the current chair of YPT, Dr. Sevda Hassan, sadly passed away this week. The podcast itself was recorded before Sevda passed away. She listened to it and was really excited to see it being launched. Sevda was passionate about her work for ESOT and YPT, and many of us joined the committee because of her presence. She was a gifted leader, and her absence has left a massive void. In addition to her many accomplishments, she was the most amazing friend and colleague anyone could wish for. As a committee, we are determined to make Sevda proud and complete the work she started. Therefore, this piece of work is dedicated to her. Sevda, we miss you dearly. We miss your laughter and the way you brightened up all of our lives. We will never forget you. Rest in peace, our friend. Thank you all for listening to that, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the podcast. Hey everyone, welcome to our very first YPT podcast. After months of planning, and we're finally here. We've got me and another co-host today, and we'll start off with introductions. My name is Dylan Darbury. I've newly appointed consultant in kidney transplant in Birmingham. And I've got a younger and cooler co-host. Stan, how are you doing? Ready to go?
Yes, ready to go after months of preparation indeed. I'm a real transplant geek, a surgical resident from the Netherlands with a PhD in transplant imaging. Together with Dylan and several young European colleagues, we are the new Young Professionals in Transplantation Board.
Exactly. So I guess this is because it's our first podcast, we ought to probably tell the audience why we've decided to do this and what sort of look forward to. We've got a great guest there for later on, but I guess what we wanted to do with this podcast series was to complement the amazing courses and educational material that ESOT already has in the form of Transplant Live, Hesperus, Academia, and really just to touch upon some of the more nuanced and softer stuff that transplant professionals of all categories need to know and would like to know. You know, things like how to apply for a grant, how to get a fellowship, how to get involved in transplant nursing are some of the things that we've already planned, and you'll be hearing from us in the future. So we're hoping that this is a great series that we can evolve, and also a bit more of a live and a running way of getting professionals in all across Europe to come and talk to us and tell us what they're doing. So without any further delay, we'll introduce our amazing first guest for this first podcast, where we're going to be talking about grant writing and how to apply for grants. And we're really honored and privileged to have roped in an amazing guest for our first episode who has kindly volunteered and been put forward, actually. Her name is Dr. Nina Pillat, who many of you will know from ESOT circles. She's an associate professor in immunology at the Medical University of Vienna in Austria. She did a PhD in genetics and microbiology, and her doctoral thesis was on therapeutic use of regulatory T cells in the induction of transplant tolerance. And in fact, that was probably the first time I met Nina at a Hesperus course when she gives a fascinating series of lectures. She's also recently spent time in Sydney at the Garvin Institute with Professor Sprent after receiving the Erwin Schrödinger Fellowship. Nina was very modest when I asked her how should I introduce her. So I found her CV online and got a bit more information. She's obviously accumulated an impressive list of national grants and publications. And we couldn't think of a better person to take us through this podcast. She's also the current chair of the Basic Science Committee, who the YPT board are working together with on this podcast. And the Basic Science Committee fell over each other to volunteer Nina to come and speak to us. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this with us. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for inviting me and also for the kind introduction. I'm really happy to be here today and talk about grant applications and the impact it has for young professionals. And as I'm currently, as you mentioned, the chair of this ASOC Basic Science Committee, I'd like to seize the opportunity to encourage young professionals to affiliate with the basic science within ASOC. So we are not just a bunch of old gray basic scientists playing with mice, but we really like to engage with clinicians tackling daily clinical problems. And I really like to encourage young MDs to dip a toe into the world of basic science, because I really think the future lies within multidisciplinary research. So I also like to mention our international transplant meeting, a joint meeting organized by the ESOT, ASTN, TTS. It will take place this year in Berlin from the 15th to 18th of May. It's a really great opportunity for young professionals, as it's a really small meeting. And we made sure to invite both plenty of renowned speakers and young professionals, and there will be plenty of networking opportunities for young professionals too. The program, if you're interested, is already published on the ESOT website.
That's amazing, Nina. Yeah, I'm hopefully that's going to be a meeting in person rather than another virtual.
Really hope so.
Yeah, so we're longing to meet in person, I think. So as I said, this podcast, we're going to sort of dip into grant writing. Now, I think it's fair to say that we're not going to cover every single aspect of grant writing in the 30 to 40 minutes we're going to be discussing this. We were hoping these podcasts are going to be short, things like, a podcast you may listen to on your way into work. And so we're going to touch on some of the basic concepts and pick Nina's brain and see what we can get out of her. So maybe perhaps if you could tell us about your first grant application. You know, we all kind of start small, I guess, and if you can take us back to how you started and I guess what did you learn from that very first experience of grant writing?
Well, I have to admit that during my studies there haven't been any courses on grant writing, so my first experience in grant writing was at the start of my diploma thesis. As I wasn't really interested in use of fruit flies, I did my diploma thesis at the Vienna General Hospital. And the group I worked with, we've been working on P53 mutations in colorectal cancer and also the impact of the mutations to the response to chemotherapy. Also back then, we haven't been used to getting paid for diploma thesis. So my boss back then, she told me that if I help her to write a grant, she's happy to pay me for my work. So I really jumped into deep cold water and I had no clue how to start. But in the end, we just got lucky and received a small grant. And it was really cool getting paid for my work. And it was really cool to learn so much about grant writing, also a little bit about the clinical problems. So as I come from a really basic scientist studies, it was different than also all what I used to and what I learned so far. And yeah, during my PhD, I had the opportunity to write several grants, and I did my PhD in Thomas Weckerle's lab. I am sure most of you know him. I was involved in writing animal ethics proposals. He involved me in other grant writing, and then I started writing my own applications first for small early career stage fellowships, also travel grants to cover the Congress expenses. And it helps to have mentors who teach you along the way, but you just have to start writing at some point.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, as you say, it's just about putting your hand up, isn't it, and starting off and then hopefully having the right mentor. And sometimes these kind of discussions are, you know, along the corridor, someone walking by and saying, "Hey, Nina, do you want to write a grant with me?" And then you say yes, and then the ball starts rolling. So that's fantastic. Brilliant. Stan, yours.
Yeah, and I guess it already brought you very far, but most junior researchers are focused primarily on publications and getting their articles out and sometimes forget that you also have to work on the next project. What do you think is the importance of grant writing for a junior researcher?
Well, I think, first of all, there's a big difference between clinician scientists and basic scientists, as we usually don't get paid for our normal job because doing experiments all day is our normal job. And at some stage, you have to write your own grants so you have some funding for yourself and for your experiments. And but I think nowadays it's equally important for clinicians, as most tenure track positions require that you have experience in grant writing. You have to you have to show them that you got some grants, received a certain amount of third party grants money, and yeah, also for most not like. You can write a lot of reports, clinical case reports or whatever, but for most high impact publications, you need like funding, you need a big idea, and you can only realize your ideas if you receive a grant.
What can youngers learn from writing those grants? Because it's not all about the outcome, but I think also about the process of writing.
I think there's also a big difference in writing if you write a grant or if you write a publication. It differs in style. Also, if you write a grant, you also need to sell your ideas, to pitch a bit, and you do this to a greater extent as you normally do in writing a publication. You really need a good idea. You need to be prepared, and you have to think of a lot of things that are not important in a publication, like how much money do you need? How much time do you need? Who needs to be on your team? And I think we will talk also more about those things, but I just want to mention that there is a big difference if you write a grant application or if you write a publication.
Yeah, so let's maybe just go into that a little bit more, Nina. So you said there was a big difference, and quite rightly, in publications and grants. What are the ingredients of a good grant, would you say?
So if you want to write a successful grant, first you need a good idea. And it's really important that you have like a good storyline. So it's just not a random aspect that might be interesting. It's not like leftover questions from a bigger project. You really need a nice storyline to write a nice grant. And it always helps to also pitch your grant idea to some lay people, like friends or family, to see if they can follow, because it's not just that the reviewers, they might not be experts in this specific thing that you want to do in your grant, but they want to see the bigger picture, why you are worth funding, why this project is worth funding, what implications it might have for science, for the community, and also in grant writing, it's important you have to sound interesting, your project has to sound sexy, but it also needs to be realistic in both the time you need for completion and also the money you apply for.
In terms of money, Nina, so I mean, grants is all about the money, isn't it? So who do you get involved in your grant writing in terms of helping you with the money aspect of it and the finances and the budgeting?
So especially if you're new to grant writing, it always helps to ask people that received a certain grant or a similar grant that the one you want to apply for. Reading other grants, especially successful grants, can help you with your own. It's not about copy and paste, but getting a realistic idea what you need money for, how to budget, how long things might take. So if you're at the beginning of your PhD, you would think, oh, this is all going straightforward and this is like it is. And then in the end, you spend the first 4 years of your PhD in working package one of your imaginary grants. So you need, especially for bigger grants, you need a multidisciplinary team and you need a good mentor. This could be a fellow scientist that you're friends with and who has more experience. This could be your boss or another senior researcher. And for most grant applications nowadays, it's important to have a statistician for sample size calculations and stuff like that. I mean, you don't need to be an expert in anything. There are people who learned this in a very efficient way, and they are better than you might ever be because you're an MD or a scientist, but they are the ones that know statistics. If you're a basic scientist and you want to work in, like we are talking about grants and transplantation, so you need you might want to have a clinician on your team. So he, because they could help you like sell the bigger picture, what the patients can gain from it, what society can gain for it. And if you're a clinician and want to do experiments, you might want to consult the basic scientist, immunologist, to see what's possible, what are the state of the art research essays that you want to apply for this research question. It's really good to have a very diverse team here.
And how important would you say is preliminary data, Nina, in before you write a grant? I always feared that I don't have enough initially to write the next step. How important is that?
Well, it's really important, and it's a prerequisite for almost every grant. So you, and also, I mean, if you work on a project, you might have an idea for a follow-up or also maybe a completely different project. But you don't write a big grant if you have no idea, no preliminary data. So you really, you don't start from scratch.
Yeah.
Well, most researchers don't, because there is this project and maybe my PhD student, she does some experiments, then finds something that's really unexpected. So we might want to redo it and see if this is just an artifact or really an interesting story. So then we have already preliminary data when we start writing the grant.
So I guess that's where the good mentorship and multidisciplinary teamwork really, really helps, isn't it?
And to go more into the teamwork, for most junior researchers, working with a team is the thing you learn when performing your research. And how do you get the team interested and motivated to help you with your project?
Well, a tip for young professionals is start building your network early. Try to help out with other projects, because people will appreciate, people then also will help you, and not just for the sake of a co-authorship, because they know you, they know it's good working with you, you know, they know you're reliable, and you want to have these people also on the other side, so you want to have them in your team. I can't stress it enough. It's really good to have a mentor who brings constructive criticism. So you might have a good idea, but there are always some blind spots, things you haven't thought about, things you have no clue about. And you need people to point these out, because the reviewers, they always will.
And for working with the team, you will always see in grant writing that deadlines are the most important thing. And every researcher always wants to be way ahead, start early. But when working with a team, you are always working close to the deadline. How do you make sure that you are not writing your grant on the final day of the application process?
Well, there are different types of people that start really early or that best perform under pressure. So you really should know your deadlines. You should know what you need from other people to like finish your grant application. If you can't do the sample size planning alone, you need to have a deadline with the statistician weeks before your grant deadline. And it also depends on the grant and the specific project. If you need an ethics approval or an animal ethics approval, you need to make sure that you have this if it's mandatory for the grant application. So there are several things you have to think about. And if you have really an idea like 1 week before a grant deadline, then it might be good to apply for the next year, because you will need the time. And your grant will get better the longer you think about, the more opinions from fellow coworkers you have on it. And it's difficult, because, of course, you always need money now. But there are also several grants that if you apply and fail, then you're banned from the next application deadline. So you should never submit a grant that you don't really have prepared for.
Yes, indeed. That sounds like a good advice. Then something totally different. What we see now in grant applications, in the rules and regulations, is that most organizations stress out that diversity is a very important point, not only in the team, but also in your research application itself. Do you have any advice for the audience on how to include diversity in their research projects, in their application?
So pragmatic answer is you just have to deal with this aspect as it's mandatory nowadays. But having a diverse team, it not only ensures gender equality, it helps counteract discrimination, but it will also massively improve your project. As a diverse team, we'll have diverse strengths and ideas, and this adds value to your project. And for the project itself, it also helps you to prevent bias. So if you're working with, for example, female mice only, you might fail in translation because you translate it not only to female patients, and of course also the other way around. And it's sometimes it also applies to cell lines or whatever your project is dealing with. So of course there can be gender specific questions and projects, but for the bigger picture, you should always try to look at every diversity aspect.
That's great, Nina. Thanks for that, those answers. It's quite difficult in a European-wide podcast like this to point out any specific grants, but I guess all the early young professionals who may be listening to this will be starting off with smaller grants, and that's, as you said already, the way to start. And getting grants these days, in particular with the pandemic and everything that's been going on, is becoming more and more difficult with budget constraints. Have you got any specific or European grants that you think that young professionals should be looking into and applying for?
Of course, every country has its own specific national grants that are there are always grants for every career stage. I would also advise young professionals to apply for travel fellowships, so to work in another lab. Always good to also work abroad. It not only helps on your CV, but it also helps your career, as you, like with every new job, you jump into cold water. And if you work in another lab that might have other rules, that might have other ways to tackle things, you always learn. So you should always seize these opportunities to work in a lot of different labs, to work in different clinics. So, as we are here, the young professionals and the basic science, so I'd like to stress that there are a lot of really good ESOT scholarships and ESOT grants. There is educational scholarships, there is study scholarships, transplant fellowships, both for basic science and for clinicians, and now the new ESOT Global Grant. So it's really worth to look into the ESOT website and see what kind of grants we have here. And I can really recommend them.
And you got a chance to not only spend time in Europe, but outside Europe in Sydney and other countries. So how did you find that? What did you learn from that experience?
I have to start with, I always wanted to live close to the sea. So I really like surfing and I like the sun. So I think I'm really born in the wrong country. And during my early postdoc years, I had to decide if I want to stay at the medical university, get a tenure track position. And this requires that you work abroad for at least 6 months. Before my daughter went to school, I applied for a travel fellowship, and I was really lucky enough to get it. And I really wanted to move to Australia. And then I got the chance to know Jonathan Sprent, I applied for his lab, and he was really, really, from the beginning, he was really positive and encouraged me and helped me with the grant application. And the year I spent there was really important for my career and also for my personal development. So it's a big adventure to move abroad with your whole family, not also only to another lab, but to the other side of the world. And it was also really hard to combine being a mom, being a wife, being a researcher, and still I also like to have some leisure time. And it was all just, at the end, I didn't know how I made it, but it was an awesome experience for all of us. And I got a nice publication out of it. And following this publication, another grant here to fund the next 3 years of my lab and my students. I really had a good time.
And did you get any surfing done?
Yes. Well, it's of course every weekend I had time off. Every day I took off. There was no waves, as it always is. But it was just nice to live close to the beach, to have my daughter experience another culture and another country. But no, I'm not a pro surfer yet. I think in this life I won't be.
That sounds like an amazing experience.
Sounds very successful. Like everything we have discussed until now, as you are a successful grant applicant. But we also have to talk about the downside. You also did hear some no's after grant applications. And how do you deal with those unsuccessful applications?
Well, of course, it's always difficult to receive a no. I think that the first thing you want to make sure is that you don't take it personally. You should always ask for feedback if it isn't provided anyways. So, and then if you receive feedback from the reviewers, you should maybe talk with a senior scientist or clinician about which parts of their criticism are constructive or which are just the reviewer didn't like you or your project. And it's also important to learn from it. And sometimes it's just that your grant was really good, but it was a lot of good grants. And in the end, it was that the reviewer just liked the other project better than yours. So there's always some personal opinion when reviewing a grant. Of course, practice makes perfect. If you want to resubmit your project, you really have to think about, well, can I do better? Is my project good enough for this type of grant? Or maybe it would fit better in another grant program? Or maybe your project just isn't good enough to get funded and you have to think of something else or work on it to make it better.
And do you have some rules for yourself or for your lab that if you tried twice or three times the same project that you say, maybe we have to stop and think of something new or other kinds of mechanisms to not keep using the same projects for a dozen of grants?
Well, it really depends. Usually when an idea or project isn't that good, you receive criticism after the first time you submit that will prevent you from submitting a similar bad proposal to another grant. But I think there are no rules. You just have to be really realistic about your project, about the grant you're applying for. And sometimes it's also that you have a good idea, you started as a side project, you don't get it funded, but in the end, the data are good and you publish it anyways.
Yes, that sounds as a good message for youngers.
Yeah, that's some fantastic advice, Dan, isn't it? I mean, I think it's so nice speaking to you and getting that personal experience from you. And I guess if I could summarize things, that good grant applications need a good multidisciplinary team. You need to be resilient. You need to prepare. And of course, every grant has tons of information on their own personal website. So it's about preparing, tailoring your grant, getting the right team involved, and then quite a lot of persistence and maybe a few tears on the way.
So, last but not least, as you mentioned it, it's really important to read the grant guidelines carefully, especially if you apply with one project for several grants, because the first time you don't get the funding, but it's a good idea. So you don't want to piss off reviewers by not adhering to guidelines or having typos in your grant application. So this is really something that's not that hard to do. So everybody can do it. Having a great idea is something that's not that easy, but adhering to guidelines, it really is. And you should really take care to adhere to guidelines.
Brings it back to practice makes perfect.
Perfect.
I guess that's a good one. And find the perfect mentor.
Yeah, exactly. So good. We got some great tips there. So we thought we'd end off with a couple of personal questions. I think you've given us a personal side to your life and career already. But we just thought we'd end the podcast with a slightly lighter note. We've got a lot of young professionals hopefully listening to this. First question, if you had a time machine and we send you back 20 years, What advice would you give a young Dr. Nina Pellat?
Well, the same advice I give my young students. If you work hard, you're doing great. Be sure you never forget. And you really have to actively seek collaborations and opportunities, because nobody will come to you offering something for free. So go out and get what you want and work hard for it.
Great.
Always try to look at the bright side. So I know nowadays with COVID, that's... So when I was a PhD student, the most exciting thing about long hours in the lab, a lot of failed experiments and all the downsides that, that being a PhD student has, it's I got to see the world. You can go to national, international conferences, meetings, you meet a lot of great people. I mean, you can meet Nobel Prize winners at the transplantation meetings. You really got to see the world. That's really something that you should appreciate. Always appreciate the things that life throws at you.
Yeah, actually, in fact, Stan and I were just talking about this the other day, and we were saying that, you know, life is not all about the destination. It's about the journey. And you got to kind of embrace the journey. And then finally, what music do you like to listen to in your lab or when you're coming into work? Do you have any type of music that you listen to or your lab listens to? Is it a democracy in your lab? Do you have to, or is it a tyranny where only Dr. Pellat's music is played?
Well, no. So everybody can have his own type of favorite music, of course. We don't listen to loud music in the lab, except for special occasions, but it distracts people if they are need to concentrate for some essay or having a phone call. And of course, all PhD students, they don't have their private rooms. So most people listen to music with their earplugs, so everybody can listen to whatever they want. When I listen to music, I think I'm stuck in my teenage years, as I like to listen to punk rock a lot. And my favorite all-time bands are Queen and the Foo Fighters, who hopefully will be in Austria this year in summer again. And I don't drive with the car a lot as I live close to my lab, but I listen a lot to music when I go running, and I run a lot. I'm even doing sky races and ultra marathons, so I have a lot of time to listen to music. And I think this is a parallel to what you said. Also, if you do 100K races, you really have to enjoy the journey and not looking towards the finish line.
Amazing. Love the Foo Fighters. I hope you get to see them this year. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this podcast with us. I hope everyone who's been listening to this has got something out of this. We've got some amazing insight into one of the amazing transplant professionals in Europe at the moment. So thank you again, Dr. Pellat, for being with us, for doing this podcast.
Thanks for having me. It was really a pleasure.
No problem. Thank you very much. And we look forward to our next few podcasts. Stay tuned. So on behalf of the Young Professionals in Transplantation, the YPT committee, and ESOT, thank you very much. And this is Stan and Dylan signing out.